Now, for something completely different, here is your host, former New York City radio star, now relegated to third-tier podcasting, Brian Wilson.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, people of all sexes, and especially all of you seriously side-eyeing your office fire alarm with happy hour in mind, welcome once again to this week's excruciating episode of The Two and Only, our weekly slide down the razor blade of life, not nearly as uncomfortable as sitting in front of Matt Gaetz. I am your host, Brian Wilson, star of stage, screen, and television. Of course, three of those are outright lies. However, I once read Paradise Lost, Moby Dick, and David Copperfield in one day and still had time to refurbish an entire dining room that evening. Joining me once again is investigative journalist, best-selling author, diuretic pigeon for the New York Post, and America media's most wanted guest on radio and TV talk shows, fresh from his all-night stand-up comedy lecture at the Mises Institute's Rothbard Memorial Javelin Throwing Contest, anatomically correct with his trademark collection of facial follicles, my sidekicking compadre, James Bovard. Welcome back, James.
Hey, Brian, thanks for the kind words. Javelin throwing contest, hey? Well, you know, I always wanted to be a javelin thrower, but the high school I went to only had discus throwing. So, I had to make do.
I seem to recall a conversation we had X number of years ago about that you actually got in there with the kind of an adult frisbee and made some headway.
I had a lot of fun. It was, it ended up in the top 8 in this state or something like that. It was something I enjoyed a lot in high school, but after high school, it's kind of like, okay, well, you know, maybe this isn't my talent in life. Mm. So perhaps I should read some more books.
Well, I've never heard of a high paying discus throwing gig anywhere in my travels.
There was a gentleman who'd won 4 gold medals in the Olympics. Al Order was his name. I think he was from New York State. And he had a great line. He said that the only way the media would ever pay attention to discus throwers is if the discus throwers were throwing the discus at each other. So that hasn't happened. So it's, it doesn't get as much, media play as high jumpers or triple jumpers or tiddlywinks, basically. So, what the hell? It was fun.
Well, actually, I think the anatomically incorrect swimmers are getting the most attention these days.
Is true. I mean, it's certainly helping the sales of swimsuits at Target.
Yeah, especially the ones that come with a cup. Anyway, now that the dust is somewhat settled, but the problem unresolved, what's your take on the historical moment in American history in the House?
So you're talking about the fire alarm?
No, I'll get to that. I don't know. Maybe that does carry more weight than extricating the Speaker of the House.
I don't know. No, it's I can understand why conservatives wanted to throw McCarthy overboard. It's interesting. Congressman Thomas Massie is one of my lodestars, and he was totally opposed to throwing McCarthy overboard. But now Jim Jordan is running for speaker, and I think Jordan would probably be, more effective and tougher. So,
yeah, I've always enjoyed Jordan's rather succinct approach to getting to the bone of various matters. His organizational abilities, as far as oversight on the various committees that he chairs, is pretty admirable. I don't know if you have to give that up to take on the speaker's responsibilities. I don't know that there are too many other people that are as compelling, as he is when the rubber meets the road. But the mainstream media, especially the folks over at Fox, I was noticing, would have us believe that the House descended into full-scale discombobulation after McCarthy was surgically removed from the speaker's gavel. Did you see it any other way? I didn't pick up on ABC, NBC, CBS, NPR, CNN, or any of the rest of them. Well, CNN, yeah, but
see any of them either, Brian. But go ahead. What's your question?
Well, I was because Fox is seen as the only conservative network, and that's the way they made their name and all the rest of all the various talk shows and so on that were associated with the so-called news shows. We tend to watch that carefully. Plus, between Cassie and me, we know several of the people that are still on up there. But
I was watching a special report with Bret Baier, and I noticed that he's looking more and more, kind of like a closet misogynist. He had Andy Barr from, Kentucky, Nancy Mace, on last night. Barr voted for McCarthy. Mace voted against. So he takes Mace first, and he's really grilling her, interrupting her, on reasons, for her vote to vacate. And why did she do that? And she's going to lose support. And don't you know all these various organizations are going to delist you? And I mean, he was really coming on to her in kind of a condescending, adversarial sort of fashion. Meanwhile, giving Barr uninterrupted time for a full-throated bellowing of all the Republican establishment talking points in fealty to McCarthy's accomplishments, passing everything from world peace to gas and so on. It was really kind of astounding and partisan, in my opinion, to watching him in operation. But what was fun to watch was Mace, ultimately, when Barr shut up, kneecapped him with the fact that the bill passage that he was crowing about, all these bills, all these efforts and so on, didn't mean squat, since at least four of the big ones were currently gathering black mold on the altar to Chuck Schumer in the Senate, where they'll most likely experience the slow death of all Republican legislation that doesn't conform to Democrats, the Democrats' version. And I just thought that was really kind of interesting, because you never hear about that. The House is always crowing about all their accomplishments, all the things they've passed, completely overlooking the fact, or not mentioning, that the Senate is DOA. I mean, they never pay any attention to it. If they do, they tear it apart and put it back together again in their own image, and you're supposed to send it back to the House, and they're supposed to be excited about that, which, again, that rarely happens with the current balance between Democrats and Republicans. So that was the it's not for anything other than looking for little occasions like that to see whether or not, say, for example, with Fox, the big conservative network is really living up to their image. But anyway, Republicans never pass up an opportunity to pass up an opportunity, snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. I get the sense that Republicans would rather be attractive losers than messy winners. But moving right along, switching onto a more serious topic, your New York Post torpedo targeting of Representative Jamal Bowman, supposedly mistaking a fire alarm for a decorative wall hanging from Home Depot. I noticed that Taylor Greene did a TED talk on fire alarms and emergency doors and subsequently demanded Fire Marshal Bowman's scalp. Outside of the very entertaining and pointed story that you had in the Post, is this going anywhere?
I don't know. I mean, it certainly helps that Bowman came out on. So it was on Saturday around noon, I guess, that Bowman pulled the fire alarm in one of the House office buildings as a way to slow down the GOP progress on getting a compromise bill passed, and then Bowman claimed it was an accident. And then Bowman's office spiced up the story on Monday by encouraging Democrats to call Republicans Nazis for mentioning the fact that Bowman had set off the fire alarm. And so this is a new and much broader definition of Nazi than what's previously prevailed during the Biden administration. So
true.
I guess I'm just waiting to see. No, I shouldn't make that joke. No, this is funny as hell, I think, because the whole thing is such buffoonery. Milton Berle had a great line. Milton Berle said it's possible to send a man to Congress, but you can't make him think. This guy, Jamal Bowman, who's basically a socialist from Yonkers in the Bronx, proves that point. Bowman was a school principal for 10 years, and he used to run fire alarms as part of the duties of his school. But I guess he forgot what they looked like, or else he thought it was a magic button or what. And it's like, and for him to be saying, well, I don't know why people are making a big deal out of this. This is a great snippet of Congress in action and the values, the morals. And I don't know why anybody would trust any of these rascals.
Well, that's the thing that, especially when he came out of his office, they caught him on tape with that that clip. But I don't know why anybody's making such a big deal about this. It's there was so much, as you just mentioned, there was so much wrapped up in that one comment. My takeaway from it was looking at that, looking at the conduct of other representatives and senators and their comments and so on, Lindsey Graham and Ukraine and all the rest of it. It's just fascinating that the American public is so comfortable with these people making laws telling them how to live. There was a meme up on Facebook I remember seeing that, you know, they can't keep track of millions and millions of dollars that went to Ukraine, but the IRS wants to know what happened to that $600 you made at the yard sale.
Yep. Yep. It's a paradox.
Yeah,
I mean, it's, but if you look at the approval ratings for Congress, I think they're around 20% right now. So people have got a lot of disdain, but they, you know, but they keep reelecting the House members, and that's partly because of the horrendous gerrymandering that makes a mockery of a mockery of an honest election. But they've been doing this so many years. Maryland is one of the worst states in the country for that. Maryland is so rigged that even the Washington Post editorial page has said it's a crock.
I thought the Supreme Court was slowly getting involved in some of this. I don't know whether the state Supreme Court, the federal Supreme Court, but basically coming in and looking at the at this Warsaw test. You know that.
I might be mistaken. I think most of the Supreme Court's concern has been about Voting Rights Act provisions and the thing that voting rights. You know, the original Voting Rights Act basically said, you know, that people have a right to vote no matter what their race, religion, whatever. Since then, with the various amendments to it, it's become a lot more focused on providing protected districts for minority representatives. And that's, you know, that's another way that makes a mockery of, you know, voters' choice. So.
Yeah, well, it'll be to follow the bouncing ball. I think that they've already determined that some of that similar skullduggery going on in Wisconsin has pretty much put that state or changed that state to decidedly blue instead of purple or red, and that'll solve the problem of them voting the wrong way come November. But interesting stuff. The way all that that works, it's not so much a matter of what constitutes good government, just a matter of finding out what some of these people are doing to get around judgments and Supreme Court rulings and all the rest. I saw on one of the chat shows, I think it was on Sunday, they tried to pin down somebody to the fact, I think it was Jean-Pierre, the fact that the Supreme Court told Joe Biden he couldn't pull off this nonsense with the student loans and forgiveness and all the rest, said you can't do that, it's unconstitutional, and he's doing it anyway, you know, because nobody's going to jump in and stop him. And that's a little disheartening. But before we run out of time, I'd like to take a little bit of time to turn everybody's attention to another Bovard piece of resistance, which is French for damn good reading. Macaulay and the Ghost of Tyranny's Past, currently available on the Future Freedom Foundation website, fff.com, and, of course, at jimbovard.com. Your admiration for Tim Macaulay, which whom I'm embarrassed to admit I was totally unfamiliar with until I read your piece, really come shining through parts one and two. How about a thumbnail on your attraction to this guy and why the things he had to say are so pertinent right now?
Well, Thomas Macaulay was a British historian, lived about 1800 to 1859. He was one of the best essayists in English language, wrote very piercing political essays, very eloquent, and he's very much the classical liberal school of values. So you read him and you understand why the government power should be so limited. His History of England, five-volume collection, was one of the best things that I've read as far as walking people through why government power in itself can be so destructive, and showing the progress of how the kings in England were eventually put on a leash with things like the Habeas Corpus Act. The Habeas Corpus Act was, I think, 1679, it said that the government had to have a reason for locking somebody up. Now, people say, well, of course, isn't that self-evident? No, it's not self-evident for most of history because governments do what they want. But this was a formal act of parliament that was this often been violated in England. It's also part of the U.S. Constitution even before the Bill of Rights. And so that's been there. It's also been violated a lot in this country, especially after 9/11 when there were mass secret arrests. And the Bush administration had one excuse after another for not bringing the suspects in front of a federal judge for a hearing. But there are some lofty principles, and there was a clarity about things like torture going back to the 1600s. That was one of the greatest abuses of power that imaginable. And to read in Macaulay some of the back and forth, the arguments for and against it, and some of the eloquence of the opponents. But then to flash forward after 9/11 in this country, where you had the Bush administration and their top lawyers in the Justice Department concocting one excuse after another the Constitution, Eighth Amendment prohibits cruel and unusual punishment, but it's not really punishment if they haven't been convicted or if they're this or that. And it was just utterly shameless. And it's some folks were ragging on me on Twitter this past week because Senator Feinstein passed away. Senator Feinstein, most of what she did, I strongly opposed. She was not pro-freedom. She was not pro-peace. But she did do a good job of fighting to get out some of the facts of the CIA torture regime during the Bush administration. And she had to fight the Obama administration, Obama White House like hell. He had the CIA spying on the Senate committee that was doing the investigation. It was horrendous. But she fought through and got at least a 600-page summary of the report out for the American public.
Well, I don't know. I remember that incident. I don't recall that it had any everlasting effect on Bush's respect for habeas corpus or...
No.
But, as opposed to his lofting the Patriot Act uber alles when it came to all of that stuff. And you bring out in that piece, again, at jimbovar.com, that all the various and sundry, or at least most of the various sundry and summaries of what Bush did and so on. And I think it just as kind of a sidebar is that Abe Lincoln, oh, good old honest Abe, was no great respecter of habeas corpus either.
He was dreadful. He was dreadful on that issue. I mean, and Lincoln was dreadful on most civil liberties issues. It was great that the slaves were freed,
some were.
That's true. I mean, if you look at the Emancipation Proclamation, it didn't do you any good if you're living in Delaware.
Yeah. Illinois, great shape. You know, that's about it. But I tell you, one gem I learned from your piece is the answer to a long unanswered question that we touched on today is why aren't our fellow citizens as outraged at government atrocities as we are? And you had the Macaulay quote, a society is not bound to endure passively all that tyranny can inflict because nobody has ever been able precisely to define the amount of misgovernment which justifies rebellion, unquote. I just thought that was, I mean, if that's an example of his eloquence, then I'll have that one engraved somewhere because I think I put it up on Facebook as the quote. I think that was great. But, you know, this whole business now, this subject, Macaulay references back there, you know, in 1800s, 1600s, all the rest of that, you know, his commentary, your commentary, the Bush betrayal and the riding roughshod over the Constitution and everything else just about as far as freedom is concerned with the Patriot Act, the NDAA, all the rest that came into being, under his auspices and subsequently Obama's and so on. I'm about halfway through, and I wanted to ask you if you had ever read No Place to Hide by Glenn Greenwald.
I read part of it, yes.
I'm just amazed, fascinated. For those of you who aren't familiar with the book, it is a telling of the of how the Snowden tranche of files from the NSA came into public attention, and just as far as I've gotten, if anyone was to read that and not be, I don't know, scared, panicked, upset, angry, all of the above, at what the government has done and can do. This business today that we're going through right now, this so-called alert from the supposed to come through on 5G from cell phones and all the rest. Joe and I were talking about the things that government can do technically that most people aren't aware of. They can turn your cell phone on and off. They can use it as a listening device. They can track you anywhere in the world, any time, any place, into within a circumference of 3 meters from where you're standing. And you just get a big yawn out of that from most people. Do they not realize the significance of this? They just not care? They not comprehend? I don't know. Is it numb or dumb? I don't know.
Well, maybe it's some of both. There was that survey that came out a month or two ago that showed that for people in their 20s, almost 30% of them would support putting government surveillance cameras inside of every home in order to prevent domestic violence. And when you have someone endorsing that kind of position, you think, I think I'll do triage and focus my persuasion efforts on other folks, because if someone is that servile or boneheaded or both, it's like, okay, you are beyond redemption. It's like, there were some people that were born to grovel.
Well, my understanding of that particular generation is they've pretty much given up the idea of having children. Maybe they'll give up the idea of voting or running for office or anything that might put them in a position to put that type of nonsense into effect.
Hope lives eternal.
It does. Well, once again, our egg timer has run out of sand, signaling the coming curtain of mercy is about to bring this episode of the Two and Only to a merciful conclusion. A reminder, more like a nag, with all the big holidays right around the calendar, you should take this opportunity to get ahead of the Black Friday stampede and finish off your gift-giving responsibilities with any one of Bovard's books. From Farm Fiasco to Public Policy Hooligan, there's something on the 10-volume set to amaze and enthrall the discriminating reader despite the illegality of discriminating. Everyone is available at Amazon and upscale yard sales in your neighborhood. If you're slumming, consider grabbing copies of my two occasionally selling scribblings also at Amazon and select vending machines at better truck stops everywhere. Collect all 12 and easily block that water stain behind the bookcase. And don't fail to drop by Substack.com and get a free subscription to Brian Wilson Writes. It's free, but you get more than you pay for sure. As long as you're online, stop by our occasional sponsor, GetMoreTank.com, and see how you can save some serious dollars at the gas pump. GetMoreTank.com. Give it a look. If you decide to give it a try, type Brian in the promo box and get 10% off. Regardless of your shopping habits, be sure to join our bus driver, Joe Ted, at the Buy the Wee Bar and Stool for an evening wasted with Zomfear and the Pan Flute. Barfing for Distance contest starts once again at 9 o'clock. Members of today's studio audience will be receiving a life-size replica of the House of Representatives Speaker's Gavel to show everyone just who is the speaker at your house for the moment. Thanks again for enduring the two and only, the UTIs of podcasting. For Jim Bovard, this month's centerfold in Stogie's Anonymous Magazine, and our politically incorrect Brazilian shrub trimmer, Joe Ted, this is your host and all-around gadfly, Brian Wilson, reminding you originality is the art of concealing your sources. Pull the plug, Joe. Yeah.